Greetings to you, my friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you're listening to Duncan Trussell Family Podcast, being recorded live from my pool house here in Tarrytown. It's beautiful Tarrytown. A place that lately seems to have been desecrated with the infiltrator. I see many out here shopping with a t-shirt on and a ball cap on. Looking at the vetiver candles that Tarrytown is so famous for. Lifting up that cloche and smelling the candle itself instead of wafting the aroma of the candle from within the cloche. One of the first signs you don't need to be in Tarrytown, my beautiful Tarrytown. Now I wish that I had more time to talk a little bit and give my regular Tarrytown report. My what's been going on, including the ongoing lawsuit with my foolhardy neighbor who refuses to take down a pine that is sure to fall upon my beautiful garden. I talk to him again and again, so don't go thinking that I'm a litigious sort, for I'm not. In fact, I dread the courtroom. But in certain situations, a man's life, one has no choice but to kneel at the mercy of blind justice herself, knowing full well that justice will be served, and I know my neighbor will pay a dear price for refusing to take down that pine. I do have time to mention, though, that I have security cameras all over my property, and if one of the few ruffians who chose to desecrate my shrine is listening to this, we know who you are. We know what you look like, and we're going to track you down. And you will deal with something far more brutal than the hand of justice from the courts. In this case, I'm afraid, we have no choice but to resort to vigilante-style justice. Tarrytown justice. Think you and you go climbing over the walls of any old house you choose in Tarrytown. Just go climbing up the wall, climb up the stone like a lizard that you are. Jump on down and take your spray paint and desecrate one of my shrines. Just go away, be fine, is what you thought. Thought you just go away, be fine. Go back down there to Bracker Woods, wherever you came from, then we won't find you. Oh, but you couldn't have been more wrong. You couldn't have made a greater mistake in your life, ruffian. We won't find you. We found others like you who chose to desecrate our Tarrytown shrines. We found others like you. There's a lot of missing posters up around Austin. Take a look at them, because you won't be joining them soon. We got a wonderful podcast for you today. An actor, a comedian, is here with us today. Normally, I don't like to have that sort of riffraff on the show. Normally, I don't like to have these snake oil salesmen up there huckstering around on the stage, making the lowlifes laugh as a job. Getting up there in front of that camera, pretending, playing their make-believe games for the entertainment of the masses who refuse to open a book. I will never watch a TV show. I've never watched a TV show. I will never watch a movie, and nor will I ever set foot in a comedy establishment to watch some prancing and posing around up there with their silly words and their gesticulations. No. I want to go see live performances of dramatic plays at the beautiful Tarrytown Playhouse. But in this case, because one of my children happens to be a fan of said guest on this here podcast, I decided to allow him to come and do his yipping and a yapping. So with us here today, I'm excited to say Johnny Pemberton. Now, though I never would go with taking one of those comedy shows, I do like to get up there on stage myself and make the crowd giggle. You can find me over there. I will be performing not stand-up comedy, but a rendition of the Seagull song by Kerry Carter in Spokane, Washington. That's going to be the 2nd of November, 2023, all the way to the 4th of November, 2023. Again, that's the Spokane Comedy Club in Spokane, Washington. Then after that, I'll be doing a monologue of Hemingway's Finest Nights. That's at Salt Lake City, Utah on the 17th of November or the 18th of November over there. You find me Wise Guys, again, at Salt Lake City, Utah. And then I'll be heading over to the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina to do readings of my own personal adventure poems, talking about many hunting trips I've taken over the last decade or two. As a Comedy Zone, Charlotte, North Carolina, 14th, 15th, and the 16th of December 23rd, 2023. You know what I mean? Don't forget to subscribe to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. There you will find the most sophisticated Terrytown types. Finally, you'll be able to have that Terrytown feeling. No matter where you are, what hovel you happen to be sitting in there eating your bowl of beans and gruel and watching Pat Sajak on Wheel of Fortune, thinking you're watching some kind of wonderful entertainment when in fact you're frying your brain from the inside out. Get off the TV and join the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. We gather together once a week. We have actual friends, Terrytown friends, true friends. It's patreon.com/DTFH. You get commercial-free episodes of the podcast to boot. Now, everybody, without further ado, I would like to bring, I guess, someone who would think of themselves as a jester. Somebody who think of themselves as an artist, but they ain't. No actor has ever done art. To quote Winston Churchill. Somebody coming on here to tell his actor story. And I think it's worth a listen, because by the end of this, I found myself liking this lad. It made me feel like he was a Terrytown boy. I think you might like him too. So everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH. John Pimbler.
Johnny Pemberton, welcome back to the DTFH.
Oh, yes, yep. Good to see ya.
Tell everybody can you talk about what you've been doing?
Yeah, I can talk about it. I just finished making a movie, a feature-length film down in, we're in Florida, in St. Petersburg, Florida, shooting a movie.
By who?
By the director, Tyler Kornack, who directed and wrote Butt Boy. Your favorite
yes.
movie, yeah. My favorite movie, too.
You know, Johnny, yeah. You are one of the only people who consistently gives me movie recommendations that are actually good movies. Any movie now that you tell me I should watch, I watch it that night.
Okay.
Because you're always dead on. Like, you have your finger on the pulse of good movies. And Butt Boy was one of my favorite movie experiences. I mean this since There Will Be Blood. I still remember
that's a big,
first
that's
time.
A ringing
dude, I mean,
recommendation.
I mean it. When I saw There Will Be Blood, I remember that the ecstasy that you start feeling when you realize, oh my God, I'm about to watch a fucking seriously good movie. Butt Boy, same thing. And even more so in the sense that the name is, you know, you don't expect.
Yeah, you don't expect it at all. You expect it to be something. Well, I don't even know. I didn't know when I watched it what to expect, but it's definitely like you get lost. I love getting lost in the story of something where you just get to enjoy the path of the characters and sort of you get to relax but also be thrilled at the same time.
It's a masterpiece. Butt Boy is a fucking masterpiece of comedy of the modern age.
It really is.
Yeah. It's a masterpiece. It's so good, so cutting edge, so it's just God, and when you told me that you were going to be, it's like Hitchcock picking you for something. It's like Hitchcock picking you. I am so excited to see this movie, fact that you're in it, I'm a little like, it's a challenge to me because you're my friend. So like, I'm going to have to like.
It's going to be hard for you to watch it in the same way you watch other movies. But that's just what, you know, that's unfortunate. Sometimes you don't get to watch things with you don't get to watch things in a way you would watch something else, because you just know, if you know a lot about the thing, then you can't really enjoy it as much. I mean, no, sometimes, more. I find that, you know what's weird is I find that if I know someone, I tend to enjoy the music that they make like 10 times more than a stranger. Isn't that weird?
Well, yes. I mean, I know what you mean. Like, yeah. I feel like with Emo, like his music, it feels really close to me or something.
Right.
I know what you mean, but I mean, I don't give a fuck. I will forget it's you because you're a good actor. So it won't even seem like you after a few minutes.
It might not. It's a weird character for me, for real.
Can you talk about what the movie's about, or do you have to wait?
I can talk
about it. What is the movie about?
It's a movie about a guy who's like a loser, divorced guy who's really into saltwater fish, and he's like addicted to pills, to painkillers and stuff. His parents are dead, and he's like just sort of living off the residuals of their life. And it's about a mermaid. He finds a mermaid, and it's not like a mermaid, like a beautiful. It's sort of like, it's imagine of Splash. You know the movie Splash?
Of course.
Meets weird. Like a sort of like a creature movie in a sense.
Oh God! Yeah. It's scratching every fucking itch I have, man. Just, you know, any kind of aquatic cryptid, I'm gonna.
Well, then you're in, then, man.
I'm gonna be into that, man. Yeah, any aquatic cryptid.
It looks insane.
Good.
That's the stuff we don't talk about or share because it's, you know, want to be a surprise for people. But man, I mean, the movie is called Mermaid, so it's not like any kind of a
right. You're not giving anything away.
But I mean, the way it looks is just incredible. Like the first time I saw the mermaid, I was like, oh, I was just staring at her in a way like, holy shit. And that's not even with any CG put over it. There's gonna be some a little fleshing out of stuff, but
when can we look forward to this?
Gosh, I don't know, probably like early next year.
Oh god,
not that long from now.
I don't wanna wait.
Yeah, it was the hardest I've ever worked on anything in my entire life, I think.
I mean, is this the first movie you starred in?
The first movie I've been the lead of, yeah.
You don't say star anymore, do you? That's like an archaic term.
I don't know. Well, starring in a movie, you can be starring in a movie and not be the lead of the film. You can
really?
Like, yeah, I think so. I guess I would say that. Like somebody stars in something, you would say like in the movie A Simple Plan, starring Billy Bob Thornton and Bill Paxton, and Holly, what's her name?
Danzy? Holly Danzy.
Holly Danzy, or Jacob Showman and Clicky Flanweather.
Clicky Flanweather. What happened to
He actually quit. He got his master's degree in microbiology.
I know, but I mean, I keep seeing the pictures of him. I don't want to do
He gained a lot of weight, okay? He looks healthy though. I'll say that much.
No, I don't care about the fucking weight. It's the dorsal fin.
Yeah.
Or whatever that thing is that the prosthetic, or it's flesh or whatever. Like, who does it? Well, he's got a flap his face now.
I'm
happy for him. I don't care. Look, honestly, I don't want to sound like this is a great way to sound fucking old is like you start being like, you shouldn't put flappy dorsal fins on your face.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I grew up with him. So it's like, and I'm used to the no, whatever that is, the fin.
I didn't know
he
you
calls
grew up
it a
with
fin.
Him.
I did. Well, not literally. I didn't go to school with him.
Oh,
I mean,
got
it's just
it.
Like, that's the, like, you would watch his specials.
Yeah, he was on the TV all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah, and the Dancing Outlaws were just like.
Dude, that movie holds up. Like, you wouldn't, because that's a kid's movie.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think it holds up. You wouldn't think it would work in the 80s. Dude.
And Flameproof is, I watch that once a week.
Flameproof is nuts, dude. And what's really fucking crazy is if you play The Highwayman, the album with Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, if you sync it up so you play The Highwayman and turn the volume down on Flameproof, it syncs perfectly. And
is that on purpose?
Yes.
Okay, because that reminds me of Touchdown Requiem, which is something that I've always tried to watch. I just can't get through it. There's just so many touchdowns. It kind of makes you believe, like, what team could get this many touchdowns?
And it's a four-hour movie.
Yeah, 4 hours? Gosh.
4 hours of touchdowns. Like,
yeah.
I'll watch a cum shot compilation all day long.
Oh, I won't. I gave up those for Lent last year, and I haven't been back.
It's Lent's over, but I can't. I know, that's why I said it's a touchdown compilation. Is it even a movie? Like, what's the plot? You're just watching touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. You know, I'm excited to see like a touchdown. Who isn't? But like hour two, you're like, come on, like something's got to happen.
Yeah, maybe they'll get like a safety or something like that, or like a punt return or a scoop and score.
A scoop and score. Yeah. There's that one moment, 90 minutes in, where the dog comes out on the field.
Oh, I love that.
It's a cock tease, because then it just goes off the field.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who speculate that's when the movie stops, because that's what the director wanted, how he wanted to end it, and then the producers got a hold of it and ruined it.
What do they call that again? Like that's in a bunch of movies where the director sends the dog in or whatever to indicate this is when I would end the movie. What is that called?
The woof cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't. What sucks about that is like if you're watching a movie starring a dog or that like Homeward Bound or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, how do you know if there is a woof cut, because there's dogs already in the movie. So it's hard to say, like, is this where he would end it? Because, you know, when the dog helps the beaver build the dam in Homeward Bound, you know,
right.
And then that other dog runs out, is like that the end?
I don't even remember. It's been so long since I've seen it. I can't remember, honestly.
And by the way, that's not a cheesy way to get into my next question.
Right.
And I know you feel like, you've told me many times that I don't know what the word for it is. You feel weird when people are aware of all the service work you're doing out there.
Right.
But dude, I do find it really fascinating. Like, so you're working with the Beaver Aid Association.
Uh-huh.
And I did not know that beavers were having such a hard time right now building their dams. Like, I just assumed they're still out there chewing trees down, dragging the wood in across the river.
The numbers are low. The numbers are low, and the water areas, the wetlands of America are in trouble. They have been for quite some time.
So how does it, like, you explained this to me, and honestly, I don't remember all the details. But how does it even work? Like, how does it? I would imagine like beavers run away when they see people, but you guys are out there helping them get the tree down, get the wood across for the dam. Like, how do you assimilate in with the beavers?
Well, it all started with Pancake Bonanza, which is a group out of Oregon.
Yeah.
And they do these massive, massive pancake breakfasts that go straight to beavers, and they call them Beaver Tails is the LLC, Beaver Tails LLC.
What do beavers usually eat?
Beavers eat, you know, I don't know. No one knows. That's the thing about beavers. You know how they didn't know how eels would reproduce for a long time?
Long time.
They don't know what beavers eat. A lot of times, for years, people thought they ate wood, but that doesn't make any sense because they're a mammal, or I think they're actually a marsupial of some kind, like a in between. They're rodents, right? They shouldn't be eating wood.
No.
But so we just don't know. People think it's something in the wood, maybe. They're eating like maybe like a hot dog type creature in the wood.
Like a larva?
Yeah, like a wood dog. It's called a wood dog. These giant brown hot dog. They look like a hot dog. That's what they're called that. But it's a larva.
Sounds disgusting.
It is gross unless you're a beaver.
But those, I mean, what's the documentary I saw a long time ago on beavers.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, you see one of them snatch one of those things, and, you know, as opposed to other larvae that I've seen eaten in various documentaries, they fucking bleed.
They
red,
bleed,
like,
and they scream.
Red, or it's like arterial blood spraying out of the tree, and the beaver makes that weird noise. It's so gross. It made me not like beavers. Like, before that, I loved beavers.
People don't like beavers. That's why we have such a problem with beavers now, is because of that.
Well, people are hunting them, but because of that.
That's why they made such good hats.
But it is like that sound they make doesn't, like, you know, I don't, obviously, like, I think assigning human ethical systems to beavers is an idiot's folly. But I want to imagine that they are like the story's kind. They bring you gifts. They save kids from drowning and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's like that sound implies like they're not good creatures. Like that is, it's not just like they're glad to eat. It's like they're angry, almost like a sound of vengeance or a sound of like just power, a power sound.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's a mystery of the ages. It's one of those, a lot of people think that the sound used to be different back in the day. It used to sound like singing.
Is that better? That's even worse. Like,
I don't know. I like singing. I don't know about you, but I like singing.
These larvae.
I like singing, okay?
No, I'm not. I know you do.
No, I do too. Look, I like singing.
No, I do too.
I'm sorry, but I like singing. Okay.
Johnny, why are you implying with your tone that I don't? I fucking love singing.
Sure took you a while to say that, and you didn't say. Went from saying nothing to I love singing, and I'm saying I'm sorry. I like singing.
Okay, let me ask you. What makes you think that I don't like singing?
Well, everything that you just said before you said you like singing.
What did I say specifically?
Nothing. Silences. If you're not telling people that you like singing, then we just have to assume that you don't.
Where did you get that from? Like, where did you get that idea from?
Celebrity Instagram, I won't name, but a celebrity Instagram.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Dude, this is to me like, I love you like a brother.
I'm sorry, but I like singing.
I know, but ever since you got into Andrew Tate.
It's not Andrew, okay? It's not bring Andrew into this. Andrew's...
But that you, what celebrity Instagram?
I'm not going to say.
Why?
Because I don't want to make it about that. It's not about that celebrity.
Do you follow a lot of celebrities on Instagram?
No, I don't.
Because when I looked at your Instagram, you only follow Andrew Tate.
I don't.
You have one follow on Instagram, and it's Andrew Tate.
That must be a different account that I don't know about. Because
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Go ahead, pull it up. Go ahead, pull it up.
Pemberton, hang on. And let's go to
follow. Okay.
Andrew Tate.
It must have been someone else who changed their name. It must have been like someone from the Raptor program that I'm interested in.
All right. I don't want to get into it. Look, okay. Follow who you follow. But don't use the like half-witted philosophies of somebody that you're enamored with to insult your friend. We've been friends for so long, man. And like it's just I don't want to think that like some dude is getting into our friendship
let's pull it back and let's do a reset and we'll just pretend like they didn't say that and move forward and talk about cars.
Can we wrap up the beaver thing real quick?
Sure, let's wrap it up. Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay, so you guys, you're out there feeding pancakes to beavers.
Yeah, I'm not feeding pancakes to beavers. I feed them to people so they can donate to the beaver fund.
Okay, you're feeding pancakes to people to get money for the beaver fund.
Right.
And how, like, because I know you and I know you wouldn't get involved in any kind of weird organization.
Right.
So how do you respond to, like, all the beaver experts out there who are saying that it's not healthy for people to get into the nests with, like, to get into the dams? Like, you guys are, like, going into the actual dam underneath all the sticks.
Yeah.
And like spooning the beavers.
Well, we do scuba. Scuba can be very safe if you're trained. And I'll just say that. I'll say that once. I'll say it twice. I'll say it 100 times. If you're trained, scuba can be very safe.
What is you mean like scuba? But no. But you're. I've seen the pictures. They're fucking weird. Like what's her face? You're the leader of the group. Like
Tammy Green?
Yeah, all muddy down there, like holding the beaver. It looks confused. It looks scared. Like, it doesn't seem natural to do that to
them. Maybe it's not natural, but it's something that is, it's part of how we interact with the beavers. It's called breaking the stigma, okay?
And it doesn't seem, stigma? There wasn't a stigma until you started doing
it. Beavers are bad and then they shouldn't be touched and they're killers and they're they're maniacs. A lot of people think they're maniacs because one beaver in about, it was in 1927.
Yeah.
One beaver got caught on the wheel of an airplane and it flew across the Pacific and it was going nuts, making all these sounds, and it landed in France And then that thing that Charles Lindbergh said, and this beaver was just going nuts because it was like, it had a bunch of bacteria in it that was animating it. And people thought it was a beaver. And just, you know how word spread back then. It's like the movie Jaws, right? Great white sharks will never be viewed differently because of Jaws. Are they dangerous? Yes. But do they behave like they do in the movie? I don't think so.
I wouldn't want to be around one.
And this is what people think. That's what people say crazy is a beaver. Because this one beaver that happened to have a bacterial like infection that made it go buck wild crazy.
Something
like that. Essentially a beaver version of that. And it was attached to that wheel of the airplane back when aviation was novel. A million people would show up to see a special plane land because they had nothing else to do.
Well, I mean, it did chew out the wheel. It caused the plane to crash.
It did. But the there you go. This is why we spoon the beavers, because of misinformation like that.
Well, I mean, it did chew out the wheel. It caused the plane to crash.
It did. But there you go. This is why we spoon the beavers, because of misinformation like that.
All right. Okay. Can you tell people where to find the foundation if they're interested in volunteering or donating?
We have a blind trust, and we have a map point set up just because we have difficulties. So I would say
what's a map point?
It's like how they used to do raves back in the day where you have to go to a special place.
Okay.
But you just send a self-addressed envelope to Flapjack Bonanza, and you can Google the address online. And
I'll put the links up on my website. The links will be in the comment section of this if you are interested in helping out this organization. And I think it's great you're doing it, and I trust you, man. I'm sure any of the controversy surrounding what you guys are doing is overblown. In these days of misinformation.
Exactly. That's the thing. You got to get ahead of it, but it's too late for that. So, you know, we're getting out behind it and we're patting it on the butt. We're doing the good old push, they call it.
Do you have any plans of going on the road and doing stand-up? Or are you, now that you've done this movie, are you like on to the next movie? Because... you are the most of all my friends who are comedians. You're the one who like is acting, who's in serious shit all the time. Like, you have transcended. You're an actor. You're a TV actor.
I like
you're
it a
professional
lot.
Actor.
I do like it. It feels good. I mean, this past time it felt really good because it felt like I was being challenged like more than I ever have been before, and I think it feels really good to be. To be like really put upon, you know what I mean? Like to have like a lot of weight to carry. I think I realized recently that I really enjoy being uncomfortable, which is kind of weird.
What do you mean by that?
Like I really like being in situations where I'm uncomfortable and having to like, I don't know, deal with them, having to like get through it. Because I think a lot of stuff with acting is extremely uncomfortable, like physically and mentally.
Okay, so I think what you're talking about is a good sign.
Right.
And it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, with stand-up.
Right.
In the early days of stand-up, for me, you would pay attention to who you were following. And you would be like, oh no, I've got to fucking follow that guy. And you hated it. But now I'm like, I want to see what it's like. Like, I want to like go in the wake of somebody who just... is like selling out amphitheaters, probably bomb, I don't know, but experience that level of like shifting the energy away from that. I mean, like that is, to me, I look at that as a good sign, because it's like, you're like, okay, I want to like, you know, get better. And like, I want to get challenged. So I guess, I mean, I have no way to compare. I don't have a basis point here to compare to what it's like to be the lead in a movie. Because, you know, the closest I have to it, which isn't even close, is like headlining a club. And that's not even close. But, you know, you have to, like, you have to put on a good show. Like the people before you, if they tank or whatever, they were featuring whatever. But you're the one people came to see. You have to do good. So there's that sort of pressure there.
You have to show up. You have to be present.
But with a movie, it's... I don't know what the budget was for Mermaid, but my God, like that's got to be in the back of your head, which is like you're carrying an entire movie on your back. Fuck, dude.
Yeah,
what
I guess
so. What does that feel like? Do you just keep that out of your mind?
It's not in my mind at all, really. I mean, because it's not real. I'm not, to some extent I am, but also every single person who works on it is, they're doing the same thing. They're all part of the same organism that has the same goal. And so everything that I need is, if I ask something of someone, it's because to help. I think about it as being of service. You're being of service to the movie, to the picture. You're being of service to the thing. Because it's not like me. I'm not being of service to myself. I'm being of service to the greater thing that is making this film, because it's making a movie is totally absurd. It's the most, takes so much energy and time and money and all these things that are patently absurd if you look at it from an Amazon metric perspective, streamlining your business, you know, that kind of thing. It's so fucking ridiculous to do that. It makes no sense to make a movie. It's like the dumbest thing in the world you can possibly do. But yeah, so,
right. I mean, it's a severe risk. Like it can only be risky. You're and you have to get investors, and these are people who are trusting you, who believe in you, and they're investing. Everyone is taking this collaborative risk.
Oh
I guess.
Yeah.
But
it's all because you want to do it so bad. Because it's like the making of it is so enjoyable, because making the product is so rewarding that makes up for all this absurd stuff you're doing, like the hours that are weird and all the different things you have to do that are kind of fly in the face of logic.
Yeah.
Like I was thinking about that when we were making a couple of days were just really, really, really difficult, like really hard. We're out on a boat, you know, for 10 hours. People were getting seasick and stuff. It's just like real rough, and how absurd it is to do that. Cause you could work the same hours and make a lot more money doing something else easily.
I mean, this like not to go back to Butt Boy.
Right.
But I think it's important. So Butt Boy should not exist. Like that, if we are going to make a movie, if like the goal of making movies is a profit margin, then Butt Boy, based on that, should not exist. Because nobody is when they're greenlighting a movie, is going to greenlight Butt Boy if their goal is to make money, because they're going to hear the name.
Right.
And they're going to go, well, first of all, we will greenlight this shit, but you're not calling it Butt Boy.
Right, yeah.
And then they're going to be like, yeah, we'll greenlight this, but we're going to have to like redo the lead here. Like this lead isn't going to happen, and we're going to have to change it. It can't be a movie about a killer putting people into his asshole.
Right.
Like let's make it a different way that they kill the person, like maybe strangulation or something like that. And then like make it a hard boiled detective movie. And then it's not Butt Boy anymore. It's the strangler.
But then it's boring. But that's the beauty of independent cinema, is you get to make stuff that is that doesn't have a bunch of people controlling it for the reasons that are not to make something good and interesting. You're making it, trying to make something profitable. But there's tons of movies that get made all the time that are made for profit. And we know about those ones, because those are the ones where it's like a season of blood, or like just weird titles with like Bruce Willis's face on it or something like that. When he shows up for a day and they shoot him out, and they have all these people who are not actors at all, or like just the they're made for cheap because they know they can promote it. They know they can make a profit with it. There's companies that churn these out, and they do make money off them because they are, that's their whole goal. They're not trying to make something special that's going to get any kind of an award or any kind of like make someone think. It's like just something that you can sell based upon the cover on like a VOD listing or something like that. And those are always going to exist, I think, and they have for a long time. But if you make a movie with independent financing with producers who are like, they're interested in making something unique, because if you make a great movie that's really fun and people love it, that's like, in a way, it's kind of like writing your ticket to do other things. Like all the people that we like who are now like big directors, a lot of those people started off by making something small, kind of weird, for not much money, because someone took a chance on them. And then you realize, it's like the kind of thing where no one knows how to do anything. And when if someone shows up and it's like, hi, I wrote this thing and I think I can make it good. And they're like, okay, they give them a try. If they do it, if you do something once effectively, if you make a good movie once for not a whole lot of money, then you got a lot of confidence in you for at least a couple of years, because people think like, well, I don't know how to do it, but this guy seems to know how to do it, so we're gonna have to trust him. But I mean, it's all over the place, though. I mean, I don't even know, like, I know just a tiny amount about it, but there's just so much bullshit wrapped up in everything, and it's always changing too. The dynamics are always changing, like what is independent, what isn't. There's some stuff that's like partially independent. There's stuff that's like seems independent, but it's not. There's just all kinds of things like that, and I don't know. It's hard.
I have a question for you regarding the director role.
Right.
What qualifies a person to be a director?
Well, that's an old funny joke that people have. They say, director is the only entry-level job on set. It's the only job you don't have to have any experience to do, which is technically 100% true, except some actors get hired that have no experience at all. But you don't have to have... Like you haven't directed a movie until you've directed a movie. Maybe you've done some shorts and stuff. Maybe you shot your own things, like made some little things and you have directed before, but like there is no real qualification other than I think you have to be kind of like a psychopath in a way. Like sort of a psychopath. Not like a psychopath like a murderer, but someone who has enough confidence in what they're doing to do something that is, you know, it's just this impossible thing. I think also a lot of directors are just really like hyper intelligent in a way that is very specific, like a specific type of intelligence, you know, where they're able to like visualize things and understand what they want to shoot. Like they can, they understand the visual language significantly. Like some directors are super visual and they know all the shots and they don't even need a DP that much, a director of photography, to help them. And some directors are clueless to that, and the DP arranges all the shots and they just work with the actors because that's the aspect of it that they understand the most. And there's some people who are like involved in every aspect of the production, like Kubrick, you know, he was a DP himself, so he like was super,
right?
He was very
meticulous.
Yeah, extremely meticulous, like in a way where nothing else in life mattered but the movie. And there's a lot of those guys who are like that, where they're such hard asses that it's hard to describe a harder person. But there's also people like Wes Craven and stuff who you hear stories about just being the most soft, gentle people, and they still get it done. I think it's just about having this... I think it's about having such an intense drive and determination to make something that you're willing to deal with just a constant onslaught of bullshit and questions and problems and all these things that,
right?
Because there's always going to be problems. There's always going to be problems, constantly. And you have to be like, okay. So we lost the donkeys, and now all we have is birds. Okay, so how do we make the birds work in the story and still get this thing made? Like I just,
it's a huge part of the job is putting out fires.
Oh yeah, you like just triage.
Triage and how much? So it's like, I guess like if we're thinking about it in military terms,
right?
The director is like Patton. He's the general, and then he has all these sergeants that are coming up to him. He's got craft services coming up to him, being like, they discovered E. coli and the macaroni and cheese, and he's got, you know, the person who's running the extras, who's like, you know, three of the extras have E. coli, And you know what I mean? And he's like having to stop the primary job, which I would imagine would be the sort of creatively visualizing each scene, making sure that it looks the way mm-hmm. the storyboards look or what's in his head. And then being like, fuck, can we get activated charcoal? Get activated charcoal for the extras. Give it to them. It might keep them from puking
I don't know if they would be doing that necessarily, because that's something where if you are directing something and someone approaches you with that problem, you'd be like, this is not, you take care of this. This is, your job is to make sure I don't know about that thing.
Okay, great. So yeah. then the job becomes looking at the shot,
right?
Making sure the shot matches whatever's written or the storyboard. And right. then everyone's like, imagines then the director has this intimate relationship, almost like a Hannibal Lecter style connection to the actor.
Oh yeah. It's super intimate.
So talk about that. Like, so you, let's say you do a take.
Right.
And it isn't that good.
Yeah.
But you think it's good. Have you ever had that happen where you've got a great take and the director is like, no, that's not fucking it.
Yeah, all the time, constantly.
What does that look like?
Well, it just depends. A lot of times, it just depends on where you are and the kind of thing and what your relationship is like. But to some extent, a lot of times, I don't know if it's good at all. I'm just going to do it. I don't have time to think if it's good at all.
Let's do a quick improv. Okay. I'm going to be the actor. You're the director.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to do a monologue and then you direct me.
Okay.
You going to say action?
Action. Or I'll do like the Clint Eastwood. When you're ready.
So what? So the old man's dying. So what's that got to do with me?
Okay. Cut. I like that. That's really good. I think.
Thanks. Great. Let's go to the next scene.
Okay. No, I want to get it. I'll get a couple more times here.
No, that was it.
Okay. Well.
That felt good to me. No. On to the next scene.
No, we're not done yet. I want to do it again. I like that.
All right.
But I think you need to slow it down a bit. Let it breathe. Kind of let it breathe and really let some air into the lines.
Let some air into it.
Really let some air into it. And just pace it down quite a bit.
All right.
Okay. Whenever you're ready. We're still rolling.
Great. Thanks for letting me know that. So what? So the old man's dying.
I'm gonna stop you right there. If you can just
What the fuck?
I need you just to take your glasses off and also.
No, are you fucking kidding me?
No. Okay. Look, Duncan. If you could just actually, I want you to just look at one place. No.
God damn it.
It's okay. No, it's great. It's great. We're getting there. I just need you to really focus on your eyes are moving around a lot. We really need to have them not moving around at all.
All right.
Okay. We're still rolling.
Are we still rolling?
Okay. Well, actually, hold on. We have to do it. Card's almost full. Okay. We'll change the card here. So let's just run through it real quick while they change the card. Okay. All right. Just give it to me one more time. And with your eyes open, though.
That is as much as they open.
They can open more.
No, they're swollen.
No, they're not. Okay, so let's go. Let's try it real quick, okay? So, old man's dead.
Are you going to say action?
No, we're just going to run it. They're changing the card, okay? Are we good with that? Can we please clear the set? This is... private rehearsal, please.
No, don't clear the set. Yes. Stay. I want everyone to witness the brutality of this fucking director. Do not leave.
Thank you.
private rehearsal, please?
No, don't clear the set. Yes. Stay. I want everyone to witness the brutality of this fucking director. Do not leave. Okay, so that's it. Oh, okay, I get
that's,
it.
That's sort of that's the combative version. Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's
I don't
so
know.
Then you start really trusting the director.
Oh, I have to have complete and total trust.
And then that's when I think that must be a really beautiful part of the collaboration, yeah, is because now you have this conductor who is like amplifying what you're already good at in a way that you trust. And so then it must be awesome. Like there must be this cool harmony that happens where you like you're this weird team. And then, God damn, you must get like so attached to the director.
I call him my torturer.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I always say I'm on my torturers here. But I love it. I love being tortured.
Wow.
I really do. I fucking love it. I love being like just, you know, just fucking beaten to nothing. Like having to be where it's not good. It's like do it again and again and again. And it's so
wow.
Because I mean with Tyler it's that way, because he's very, very humble about everything, but he's like extremely, extremely precise about everything, because the humor that exists in his stuff is walks this very, very thin line between being like too absurd where it's not fun. It's like too silly to being so dark that it's not funny. And so I think to walk that line, you have to be doing stuff that to me is antithetical to anything I've ever done before. And so it took me a little bit to realize that. Like there's one, I remember one time we were shooting, I'm coming down the stairs and I notice something out of the corner of my eye, like this wheelchair, and then I see this box of photos and I kind of clock it and then I hesitate for a second and then I walk over to look at it. And we shot it a bunch of times, like probably 7 or 8 times. And there's one time where I did it and he's like, oh, it was great, but just don't move your head at all when you see the box.
Oh,
I'm thinking
boy.
Like, I fucking did move my head. I did like this. It went like, just the smallest thing, but he saw it. And I'm like, my God, it's like having someone like they can see literally everything you're doing and thinking all the time, to where you're so incredibly exposed all day, to where it's like, I just have to be, well, fuck, I have to, I don't know. It's like really, it's just this thing where about focusing so much, doing exactly what is asked, that it's like, it's an interesting, I don't know. It feels really good in a way. It feels like sort of this thing where like meditative in a sense, because I have to focus much.
I mean, it weirdly parallels the cult leader disciple relationship.
Oh yeah, totally.
So it's like the cult leader is like commanding you and direct and like controlling you in every single fucking way, like to the point of your thoughts is like controlling your thoughts and demanding a surrender that flies in the face of everything human. You don't want to surrender our rational mind to some fucking dude, but like it's scary.
Yeah, it's really scary. I think that's the hardest part of it, is being having like the, I think for me, it's the hardest thing is having the wherewithal to not try to like win something in the moment, or not try to like, I'm not doing it for me at all, and I'm not doing it for the day. It's like this thing, you're doing something that's for something so far in the future, you really have to like put away any kind of personal desire, which is super difficult, I think. I mean, especially if you do comedy at all, because it's such an instant gratification. Sometimes it feels like it's not, like you're not doing anything, even though you are.
Right. Right. Well, no, I mean, this is why I think it's very rare that you, the hybrid, exists, like someone who's brilliantly funny on stage and someone who's a good actor, because the two, one, like, I think one lends to the other in a certain way.
Yeah.
But it really, they're like antithetical.
Yeah,
you know, and one is like you're being yourself, the other is you're being someone else. One is you're like listening to every instinct you have and following that, the other is you're avoiding every instinct you have or pruning your instincts, mm-hmm, to harmonize with the director's instincts, which is why, like, I think most comedians, when they find themselves in the situation of being a professional actor and realize, oh, this isn't saying words or, you know, emoting. This is dance. This is like, you know, I have to step this number of steps and this eyeline and look down at this. And on top of that, be a different character. And on top of that, make it seem like there's not cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
How the fuck? How does anyone do that? Much less
it's psychotic.
A comedian.
I think it's psychotic in a way. It's very much, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, but I think it's just about focus. Just focus is all it is. I think it's just focus in terms of having to, you just have to throw everything away and be like, only thing that matters is to be of service. And that's super hard. Mm. I think I learned that the hard way, like years ago, was this TV show I was doing that was like falling apart because it was like, I wasn't doing what I was told I would be doing. I wasn't being used how I thought I was going to be used as like a comedian. You know, I was being very, had to play this very straight character and everything. And it made me really depressed and angry about stuff because I was like, you know, this was the first season of a show. So that's when you kind of form all the stuff gets formed the first season.
Yeah.
And the concrete's wet, so to speak. So you have to make sure what you're putting in there is what you want because it's going to last right. for a long time.
The character is not going to change.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you establish things early. And it was running up against a lot of opposition. And at some point, I think I was talking to my therapist about it. And he was like, you have to just change this to be where it's not about you at all. You're in service of the thing. And I was like, I guess I have to be right. Cause I can't fight this train. So I just have to help push it. And it helped me so much. The idea of just being of service to everyone else. And that's what they teach. And that's one of the first things they ever teach in improv. Is not, don't try to ever be funny. You want to make the person next to you, make right. them funny.
Right.
You don't ever want to try to be like the, you don't want to try to stand out, try to be like special or cool or funny or win. You win as a team, and you win as a team by helping the other person achieve, be their best. And I think there's something about that that's like this like great ego destroyer, and that feels so good because you don't give a shit about what anyone thinks because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You don't care about, I don't care about me. I care about, I'm serving. I'm a servant for it. I'm really a servant.
You know, man. And again, it's a distant comparison, but this is what I really love about Rogan's Club out here is because you know, in the green room, it's like a regular occurring group of comedians, and we all are hanging out every week. And like all the shit that can happen when you're at a show with comedians you don't know, or, you know, sometimes this like dark competitive hierarchical thing pops up. Whereas like now we all, it's like a workshop, and it's so cool because everyone trusts everyone else's like comedic skill set. And so like you, if you're working on a joke, you're like, hey, what do you guys think about this?
Mm-hmm.
And like you get this like brain farm of people improving each other's jokes. And it's so fucking cool. I've never really experienced it like that before. It's like a beautiful thing. And, you know, what you're talking about, it applies to like literally everything, even stand-up comedy on stage. Because you can be the comedian that goes on stage because you want the ego boost of making a room of people laugh, or you can remind yourself when you're going on stage, you're trying to give people a good night. Like you're giving, you know what I mean? Like you shouldn't be taking from the audience. Like you should be hopefully giving them
something.
Well,
it's an exchange, right? They give you their attention, and their attention gives you the ability to like, to live, like you get to fly on the energy, to like surf on it, and you get to feel good because you're surfing on it. And then they get to feel good. It's like that thing when someone says, oh my God, thank you so much. It was such a great show. Anytime someone says that, I'm always like, yeah, you may have had fun, but not, I had more fun. I know I had more fun than you did.
Right.
Like 1,000% more fun.
For sure. I mean, that's, you can't, if you're up there and you're not having fucking fun, they smell that. They hate that. It's like, oh, great. Wow, I'm sorry. Are we inconveniencing you by being a fucking audience? Boy, sorry. Did we get in the way of your plans tonight, you asshole, you egomaniacal piece of shit?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck's wrong with you? Yeah, I like it because like Ron White, when he gets off stage sometimes, I just saw him do it once, but he was like, thank you for letting me do this. And he meant it.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, that's so fucking cool. You know, like that is the attitude. That's the attitude.
Yeah, that is really good because it's just, you know, thanking. Yeah, being grateful for something like that. That's like such a, it's so hard to, it's fucking hard to do it, but.
Well, I mean, it's like a constant reminder. It's so dark when you hear about these fucking comedians or actors or whoever out there who are annoyed by being disturbed down on the street. They're annoyed. They look at people as like peasantry or some shit. And then if someone dares come up to them and say, you changed my life, man. They're like, get the I'm busy right now, motherfucker. And it's like, what is wrong with you, you vampire, you beast?
I think, but sometimes I get it, you know, like you have, not everyone's perfect all the time, but.
I don't like it at the porn theaters. You know, that sucks when I'm like about to blast and somebody's like, can I get a selfie? It's like, come on, man.
You got your disguise on and everything.
I got my fucking disguise on, got my clown suit on. It's just, come on, friends out there. Like any other time, I don't care. I like it, but Jesus Christ, when I'm about to blast, I'm almost 50. It takes like balms, salves, pills to just maintain a mild, like rubbery erection. So like when you see me at the theater and just to blast.
Let him fucking be.
Just until I blast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause honestly, man, I've had to do the selfie cause I don't like saying no. And
I've also seen that times when, you know, people come up to you in the porn theater and they're like, you think they want a selfie, but they just want you to take a picture of them. And that's kind of embarrassing. I think I've seen you do that a bunch of times where you're like,
it is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I feel like, always feel like a real narcissistic piece of shit when I'm like, hey, I'm about to blast, dude. Let's get a picture later. And they're like, what?
No, I want a picture.
I don't know who you fucking are.
Yeah, I wanted you to take a picture of me blasting.
You think you are. I'm about to blast. Snap a shot, dude. This is like, because, and I do think like what you're talking about does extrapolate to theater politics, porn theater politics,
right?
You know, which is like, when I go into a porn theater, yeah, I'm there to blast. But also, I recognize everyone around me is there to blast. And, you know, because I don't like it if I'm standing in line for the glory hole and, you know, people start getting like, it is a sponsor, but I love them so much. The new Clear for porn theaters is incredible, where they just do the retina scan and then you don't have to. It's fucking amazing.
Clear.
It's fucking amazing. You go right to the glory hole. You don't even have to take your shoes off. You're just in and you get in quick. Which is really, really nice. But yeah, I think like a lot, like these days people are forgetting like the old school sort of like team effort at a porn theater.
You gotta be a team. Cause that way, if you're not a team, then it's like, oof, you're just out there by yourself. You don't want to be by yourself. It's lonely. It's lonely being defensive.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's agonizing being defensive.
Dude, yeah,
I hate it. Like the older I get, the more my ego just plagues me. Like, because you become more hyper aware of it.
Yeah.
And you don't think it's you anymore. It's some part of you. Like, did I tell you about my steam room competitiveness that has been popping up?
No. Dude,
this is like the height of pathos. This is.
Okay.
So I've been noticing that I will go in the steam room at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. I walk in and people, I don't know how long they've been in there. I'll sit down at the steam. And I mean, this is a humiliation.
This is after you work out or before you work out? After,
I
right?
steam after I okay. work out. It'd be weird to steam before.
I don't know. Maybe, Jesus, it's, like, maybe it's a thing now.
Who does that? Who steams before a workout? You're all sweaty.
I drippy. Just steam. I only steam.
It's like showering before a workout or something.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah.
So I come in there and, you know, admittedly, man, I'm like, I'm bench pressing like 500-600 pounds at this point. I'm like,
wow.
Dude, my glutes are fucking rock hard, man. And like, I'm
that's
just,
your butt. That's not your chest, though. But
we, no, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I know yeah. that. I'm talking about my pecs and my glutes. Uh-huh. I'm not just talking about my pecs.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Get out. You know what? This. Steam room.
You know what? If I'm making you insecure, we don't have to talk about it.
Oh, I'm fucking zen.
No.
I'm fucking look, zen.
All right. You know, look. Hey, I wish I was starring in movies. I'm sure you wish you were fucking getting rock hard fucking glutes out here in Austin.
Talk about I'm coming out there soon. I'm coming out there and I'm going to hit that steam room. But tell me about this steam room politics.
Okay. This is what I've been noticing creeping into my mind. Mm-hmm. It's so embarrassing. And I don't know if it's just some like, if it's like getting in the waft of like a bunch of dudes' testosterone pheromones right. or something, because I've never thought of myself as like a high T person.
Right.
But I'll sit there. And if someone gets up before me and leaves, in my mind, I'll be like, I beat him. Like I won.
Really?
Like it's an endurance competition. Like my ego has just decided to compete with random dudes in towels. As though we were in some kind of embarrassing steam off.
I think that makes sense. I do the same thing all the time, but not with steam room, but like, with other things. There's like any kind of thing where you can commodify it or not monetize it. Anytime you can like measure something, there's a part of your brain that is just, I think it all comes from us being, having so much mental power that we just, anytime there's a lull, and we're like, let's try to evaluate something here because we're just not, we're designed to last through famines and designed to deal right. with the most like extreme situations. Yet we're almost never put to the test. So it's like anytime there's like the slightest bit of lull, we just instantly go back to trying to like these primitive things, you know. It's that's the thing that to me is like the greatest difficulty as far as like ego stuff goes, is being able to get beyond the primitive brain, which is like always trying to pull you. Sometimes it's good, but a lot of times it's this thing where you're trying to like put yourself in a like a regiment something or structure something that has no structure, just because it's in place of some sort of a hierarchy that would be existing in like right. a primitive situation.
Or you're just like, you've got a void in you. I mean, like, yeah. it's like, you know, it's like, what am I missing? Ugh. What, as far as like external validation goes, what underneath like the thin layer of identity that I call myself, what fucking just sad, empty gulf is just in there. Like it's like, God, I need to win, man. I need to fucking win. And I think this is why I get obsessed with like, you know, Reddit justice served, or you know what I mean? Like you watch videos right. of people like getting well-deserved, you know, beatings.
Instant karma.
Yeah. And then you're watching that, but and you must, it's a thirst or something for balance that yeah. you're going out into the external world for. It's so fucking, it's so embarrassing.
It really is. It's the kind of thing where it's so hard to like put your, to be in your best self, to be in your best mind and be like, I always think about that. Was it vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Saith the Lord.
And that's so hard to remember that. It's like a thing where, you know what? No one wins. Everyone dies. And it's not my place to put anyone in their place at all. Like, who am I to say anything about anything ever? Obviously, it's nice to help people and to be like, you know, to assist someone. But the idea of the opposite is just like fucking, that comes from that same thing where you're just trying to, I think what it is, honestly, I've been thinking about this a lot the past 2 months or so. is this all just like us trying to find some form of control in our lives, because everything it's so hard to realize that we don't have any control at all. And only thing you can control is how you view something and how you react to things. But we want to have like a thing where, oh, I fucking won. I got him.
You know, I think the like archetypical example of this, like in the extreme, is Cape Fear, right? Right,
the movie?
De Niro.
Okay.
Has decided to become God's hand of justice. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think he has shit tattooed on him. Like, yeah, in the beginning when he's like doing that famous fucking exercise scene before he gets released from prison. For those of you who haven't seen Cape Fear, the one I'm talking about is the remake, not the original. Remake stars Robert De Niro as a ex-con who was unjustly put into prison, not because he didn't do something wrong, but he did. He assaulted a woman, but there was some kind of loophole that he should have gotten out on, and his defense attorney didn't defend him fully because his defense attorney wanted to be the hand of God's vengeance, mm-hmm, in the world. And so
it's Nick Nolte, right?
Nick Nolte, mm-hmm, kills it. Yeah. And so Nolte fucking, like, you know, is you know, broken the primary rule of being an attorney, which is you passionately defend
attorney client. Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah. And what he did was transcendent in the sense that he went against his sacred duty for a higher calling, which is like, this motherfucker, I think, like, raped and beat a woman or something like that. So De Niro is aware of whatever this malfeasance is, spends however long he's in prison just to get jacked. Like, I can't even imagine his training routine before that fucking movie. Like, mm-hmm, ripped De Niro. Jesus fucking Christ, dude. Like, scary, scary, just ex-con muscles. They perfectly train him. And then he goes and stalks Nick Nolte's family, seduces his fucking daughter. A very controversial scene where he, like, oof, makes out so with good. What's her face?
Juliette Lewis.
Who I think at the time of filming
19?
Was... Yeah, way
maybe
too
younger.
Young
for, I don't know.
Maybe younger, and like,
she was so good. She's like a real actor. She's like the real thing. You know what I mean? Like, nuts, but
nuts,
amazing.
Nuts. And so, like, you know, the point is, they both represent people who I think have succumbed to the desire to be God. Uh-huh. You know, have succumbed to the idea that like their job, the mission in life was to exact vengeance in the name of justice. Both of them wanted justice. Both of them, like, it's so good, the parallel. Like, they're basically the same fucking thing.
I didn't think about that. I have to watch it again with that in mind, because it's like, yeah, I never thought about that aspect of it. It's interesting. The idea that they have like a, they're meant to do something. They're being guided by God.
They think something. They're being guided by God. They think they're being guided by God.
Delusion.
And delusion and hubris. Both of them are like, wow, like so proud that neither can surrender to, mm-hmm, like the faith that like the universe is going to take care of itself here. You don't need to do anything. This will work its way out if there truly is justice in the world. And, you know, and then that's the fucking question it's asking, I guess, is like, is there justice in the world? Is there a universal calculator that is actually going to bring justice into the world? Or are we supposed to be at constant war with one another to exact justice? It's so fucking good, man. I might have to watch it again.
Yeah, I got
to
watch it again, too. I kept, where I was staying in Florida, I kept seeing these ospreys. They would fly over me. And sometimes, oh, man, I saw osprey fly over me one time. And I kept thinking, like, this is like, well, this is God. It's just, these ospreys are God.
Yes.
They're just crazy. These birds are like these such big wingspans. And they're swooping down and getting fish. They're so like, they don't give a fuck about anything. I kept thinking how they're like God. And I also kept thinking about this idea. I think I told you about this, but I kept thinking about this phrase, God sent me to torture the devil. I love thinking about that, because to me that means like God created me or anyone just to be something that's uncorruptible. Like, you're torturing the devil because the devil's trying to manipulate you, trying to destroy you, trying to bring you down and make you like egotistical or defensive or like, you know, being, acting, trying to, anything that's satanic. But you were created to torture, you're torturing the devil with your actions by being like, you seem like you might be, but at every chance that there's opportunity to do something terrible, you do the opposite, and it tortures the devil because you're like a fucking, you're like this being of light that is just indestructible, and it tortures the devil. It makes him like fucking furious.
Well, the devil sent me to torture God.
Well, see, there you go. He goes their direction. So you and I are at odds.
No, we're not. No, we're not, my friend, because we're the same.
Okay.
God and the devil, just different sides of the same coin, different sides of the same coin. And you can play your godly game all you want, because we have all the time in the world.
I'm just a tool. I don't even know what.
All the time in the world. Oh, just a tool.
An instrument.
Just an instrument.
I'm an instrument. I have no desire in my body. I have no wishes, no wants, nothing.
Like a little pacifier.
I'm just whatever the God needs me to do, I feel and I do it.
Just a little pacifier. God's a little pacifier. That's all you are, just a little rubber little thing, just with a little dangling hook.
Say all you want.
Come to our side.
Go ahead. Say all you want to me.
Oh, I'm not saying anything.
Speak your riddles. Speak your riddles. You're jangling.
Little pacifier, boy.
You're jangling bangles. You can't break through my.
Where's my pacifier? I need daddy. Oh, you'll come around.
Oh, devil, I laugh at you.
Oh,
I laugh at you, poor devil.
I like
weep for you. I tell you what, I weep for you.
Oh, you weep?
Weep for you, I do.
Well, maybe we're going to get you a nappy and wipe away your tears.
You'll
come to our side.
I'll nap in the fire.
You come to our side and you'll win in the steam room. You win, and every time, they all get up. Get up and leave. You'll be in there dry as bone. Not a single drop of sweat on you. Not even the steam getting you wet in there. Dry as a bone while you watch them muscle men walk on out.
While God drips water into my mouth through a hole in the top of my head.
Oh, Lord, you're trepanning. There you are out there, trepanning again, drilling a hole in your head.
I got a hole in the top of my head that God delivers the juice to.
Oh, the Lord and God. Let me tell you something. The Lord is a lot like Joe Biden. He might have been with there at some point when he's been there making the dinosaurs and the trees and all that. He got old. He's falling and he can't get up and he don't have a life alert.
You can try to bring Brandon into this, but Brandon ain't got nothing to do with what I do.
He's out there in the Milky Way. Out there in the Milky Way. I'm falling and I can't get up. Meanwhile, y'all are down here. Oh, Lord, he gonna come back and give us our diapies.
Devil, put your stinger away. You can't sting me. I'm a piece of jail. I'm like a big sack of jail, unstingable.
Well, let me just tell you something right now.
Go ahead, tell me all you want. Tell me your riddles. Palaver me to death.
Sometimes it's the venom that make the antivenom, and sometimes that stinger. Ooh. Brings to healing, and you need to sting. You need to deal with it up there on the Milky Way. They picked him up with the James Webb telescope up there. Towel fell off. He's all flabby and old, just whipping around up there. Got his foot in a black hole, one hand stuck on a neutron star, and he's out falling, and I can't get up. That's who you're worshiping. Was that good?
That was great.
Is that the take?
I think so. I think that's the take, yeah. That was, I think I like it. I want to roll it back. I want to look at playback real quick. I want to see. You know what? We have to do one again for camera. We were out of focus.
What the
focus was
fuck?
Soft. Hey.
That was golden. Use fucking CGI. You can make it. Use AI. I got to get to fucking Craft Services.
Look, I want it. Well, what do you need, sir? We'll bring it to you.
I don't want it here. I want it in my fucking trailer, man. I don't need a fucking break. Man,
Meredith,
fuck you, Meredith.
Meredith, can you get Mr. Trussell a room temperature water, please? And it's one of those peanut butter cookies.
I want cold. How have to say. Three cubes.
Just bring them both. Okay, Meredith, bring Mr. Trussell both.
Fuck.
Look, I love it. I just want to have you do it again.
I'm working under my fucking rate. This is a low budget fucking indie. It's fucking a step down for me. Fuck you. And fuck you, Meredith.
We got it.
Your eye sucks here.
We got the master. We have to punch in for your single. That was a lot for the master, okay? It was too much for the master take. We need to do the single now. We're going to punch in on the 100, okay? So you got about 5 minutes to chill, and then we're going to punch in and get your coverage, okay?
Johnny Pemberton, I love you, man.
I love you too, Duncan Trussell.
I'm so glad you're my friend. I'm glad you're too. Glad you can do that with your voice. I think it's weird.
Suck it, dog.
I remember before you could do that. I remember before you could do that, right. And I remember we were on acid, some fucking ranch, doing nitrous.
Oh.
And you said you could see the Matrix. And then after that, that's when you gain that ability to do that with your voice.
I remember that too.
When I heard you say that, I'm like, that's a cool, I know what you mean. I'm high tube, man.
Yeah.
But then when you like demonstrated to us that you could do that shit, we were all like, whoa, like he saw the Matrix.
I could see the shape of ice, the crystals of ice is what it was.
And then, but what does it feel like when you do, like, if I could do that as a voice actor, like that would be a real, real valuable tool in my vocal toolbox, which by the way, you want to see what's in my vocal toolbox?
Shoot me.
I could do this.
Ooh.
And I can do this.
Pretty cool. I can do this. I can do it like this.
Yeah, but you're a trained actor.
So are you.
Not like you.
I'm not that trained.
It took me a long time to do this.
Actually, I can't do it and my voice hurts.
Yeah, you gotta train your vocal cords.
I can't do that, Mr. Trussell. Mr. Trussell?
It's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do.
I can do down here. Or listen to this. That's crazy that you can do that.
Yeah.
How the fuck do you do that? You're like the dude in Police Academy. Ancient reference.
Michael Keaton.
Let me try. I want to try.
Okay, go for it.
Michael Keaton.
That's pretty good, actually. It's pretty good. Yeah.
I can't.
I think once you, how long have you been not vaping?
It's been
2 weeks.
Like 2 weeks.
I think in two more weeks, you're going to be able to have full control back.
Michael Keaton.
James Webb. James.
That's nuts. If you guys could see what it's weird because he does, like, once he does, says it once, he doesn't even move his fucking mouth.
If you could only see the way I love you.
Incredible, dude. All right, we got to wrap it, Johnny. Thank you for being on the show. Oh, wait,
thanks
before
for
I wrap
me.
It, though, check out my eyes.
Oh, they look great.
Yeah, I mean, they will open again, but like, I'm so happy, dude. I got all this work done. You like that?
I think you look really good. You look about 10 years younger, I would say.
Yeah, I got the bags removed.
Damn.
Isn't that fucking wild?
Yeah, I'm going to get that too in about 4 years. I have it scheduled out and going to Turkey to get it done.
Best place to get it fucking taken out, dude. Best place. It wasn't even normal shit. Like usually when people have bags under their eyes, it's filled with people who don't cry. I'm a man, so I don't cry.
Yeah.
And your tears get backed up and then that's what the bags under your eyes are. But these bags, there were spiders.
Spiders.
Yeah, because then I told the doctors here, I was like, I feel like there's spiders under my eyes. And he's like, you're just like holding back tears.
Oh, is that why they say spiders are the tears of God?
Yeah.
God, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, because it's like either tears or spiders if you have bags under your eyes. But most of the time.
That's why people hate spiders so much, because they're scared of being sad.
Well, that's a really weird thing is that when they remove the spiders started crying. Johnny, where are you going on the road again? I thought you told me you got some dates.
I got some dates. I'm going to be in San Diego at the... Let me get this right, because it's the... how do I escape this window? God damn it. Now it's bigger. Okay, hold on a second. I can get out of here.
You can get out.
Fucking A.
You can do it.
Computer. I'm going to be in San Diego at the Mic Drop November. Let me just make sure this is right. I'll be in San Diego at, not now. What the fuck is this?
God damn.
Hold on a second. I can find, here it is. I'll be in San Diego, the Gold Room at Mic Drop in San Diego on Saturday, December 2nd. Okay. Saturday, December 2nd. Saturday, December 2nd at the Gold Room in San Diego. And I'll probably be with you a couple of times before that. But
you got to let me know about Salt Lake City.
I will. I think I'm probably in for that for sure.
Well, you got to let me know.
Okay.
Dude.
I'll let you know. I'll look up. I'll let you know.
Okay, great. And I think it's weird that people get a discount on tickets if they stand with Amos or whatever the fuck you're doing for that show. But all right.
Yeah, well, there's a discount. If you support either side, you get the same discount. It just lets me know where to seat you.
Johnny B! I love you.
I love you
too.
Thanks
for being on the show. All the links you need to find Mr. Pemberton and his tickets for his show are going to be at DougAtrussell.com. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
That was Johnny Pemberton, everybody. Johnny Pemberton. Make sure you go see him wherever he may be performing. You can find links to his shows at DougAtrussell.com. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors. And most of all, I want to thank you, the people of Terrortown, who may be listening to this. And I want to thank everybody else, but not as much as the people of Terrortown who listen to my podcast, the Terrortown Friends. I'm glad you're out there, and I can't wait to see you tonight at the Edward Peterson Masonic Hall, where I will be doing a reading of my favorite Robert Service poems. I'll see you next week.